think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
When you turn on a scary movie, you expect to be frightened by what you see on screen. But for these movies, what happened behind the scenes was also the stuff of nightmares. Is this a case of simple coincidence, with large cast and crew falling victim to unfortunate but common tragedies? Or were these films cursed by their supernatural subject matter? This week's episode is Horror Movie Curses.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Hood.
I'm gonna kill you.
This is one that I have been thinking about for a while, as far as just in general movie curses and behind the scenes. And I was so grateful to the Patreon subscribers at our Getting Into It tier who voted on this and chose this topic.
They did. This was actually going to be the October Patreon voted on topic, but due to the tragedy that happened on the set of Rust right around the same time we were going to release this, we thought it would be better to hold off for a while. So
just give us some time to breathe.
Yeah. This month, three of our topics are Patreon Getting Into It voted on topics. What did we just do?
Julius Jones, the trial.
Julius Jones. And then this. And then this on the 22nd, the voting is currently underway to see what that one is. And no matter what is chosen, it's going to be a very fun Christmas-themed episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of, boy, we found some weird ones for folks sure to vote on. So any of those three I'm excited about, I think you know the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
The topic of that one might benefit from some manscaped.
I was just about to say those little goblins might want some manscaped.
They might need to get manscaped, but yeah, this is a very listener's choice month, so mm-hmm. we like it because you guys have good taste. So we're down to cover these things. I have seen all of these movies.
Yep,
have you seen
same.
All of these movies?
Yeah,
yeah.
I have.
And it's I feel like they're made like more eerie once you kind of know. Whether you think that it's truly cursed mm-hmm. or not, but once you know all the ins and outs and what have you, it makes it almost scarier.
Yeah, I want to go back and rewatch them having known all of this now, because I haven't watched these in a minute. Specifically, The Omen, because that's the one that I remember the least. Mm-hmm. However, my mom said that movie is the scariest movie she's ever seen.
Wow.
Yeah. So
really
I want to say... Oh, man, I can't remember when it came out. We have it down here, but I want to say 1976. Okay, so I was born in 79. So that was like a couple years before I was born. So I'm not going to say that she thought she was having the Antichrist, but I'm also not going to say she was didn't think that. And then when she had me, she realized she was right. Actually, I was a very pleasant baby and child. My rebellious stage didn't hit until my teenage years.
You weren't rolling around on a little tricycle terrorizing people. You
nah,
were like in the
back
of a Mustang.
I was not causing my nannies to take their own lives by jumping off of buildings and whatnot. Ooh.
A lot yeah. of these movies also just have cursed and horrific imagery in them. Like mm-hmm. watching clips of them or going back and looking at still frames from the films. It's just does something to your psyche seeing that many, even though it is fake, but then now knowing some of the scenes that it really was all too real, despite mm-hmm. it being a fiction film, that it like burns your brain. So I can see how once you start getting exposed to that day in, day out, again, even knowing, okay, this is a movie we're all working on together, you may be predisposed to think like, oh, this is cursed. Like, of course this happened, because your brain is just looking for evil.
Mm-hmm. And you're just scared all the time. Your mm-hmm. character is scared. It's so, you know, I mean, for many actors, they are either method actors or just kind of the lines between like, all right, cut. And then to when mm-hmm. you're going about your day kind of get blurred. So if you're always on edge 8 hours a day when you're filming something, you're going to be on edge when you get off too. So, you know, a light kind of goes out in your room, or all of a sudden your radio comes on and you're like, what the fuck is going on?
You're like, this place is fucking cursed. Mm-hmm. And then again, too, it's like when somebody brings a Ouija board somewhere, once they start you're drawing all these satanic images and stuff. I mean, are you giving power to some mm-hmm. dark, sinister energy that then's going to rear its ugly head?
Very true.
Very
I also
tragic
think,
results.
I think older horror movies hit different.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's
they're
just
raw.
Something about, yeah, the raw, the grainy imagery.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I mean, and I know that that's not even intentional. That's just how film mm-hmm. looked back then. But it gives it, like, an effect that is impactful for me.
Oh, yeah. And, like, Psycho even, you know, that's
oh, yeah.
one of the oldest ones. But just because you had to be so... there wasn't special effects, mm-hmm. you know, there was only so much you could do with practical effects. So much was done with just like building tension, releasing tension, building it higher, really. So older
and
movies
really,
can be
yeah.
eerie as fuck.
Really interesting camera shots to mm-hmm. get the effect that you want, because yeah, you don't have all that stuff that we have nowadays. So yeah, I was gonna watch The Omen last night, but it was like 1 a.m. I'm like, this would be a terrible idea. I don't
like,
need to watch The Omen at 1 a.m. when I'm trying to go to bed.
It's like,
but
I've done enough to my brain.
Yeah. Tommy loves horror movies, so I'll get him to watch this one with me. Well, I am Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. For centuries, moviegoers have delighted in immersing themselves in the on-screen nightmares of the horror genre. Evolutionary psychologists say these types of films tap into our primal fears and allow for us to safely mentally rehearse how we would handle the dangers being depicted on the screen. We've learned to never separate from the group when taking nighttime strolls through the woods, not to go knocking on the door of a rundown house in the middle of the Texas backwoods, and if your creepy neighbors seem obsessed with your newborn baby, it's probably time to move. The writing, directing, and acting must all come together to form an effectively crafted horror film. But what happens when the horrors don't stop when the director yells,
"Cut!"
I think this is also why people like true crime podcasts. We're asked that question all the time, specifically why women do, because the demographic for I know our show is about 84% women, usually even higher than that. So, and I think this is why, because it allows us to safely kind of have a plan of action for if we were to encounter a similar terrifying situation of like, okay, well, this didn't work for them because they ended up, you know, not being able to get away from the serial killer. So I would do something different. And you can kind of like play it out in while it's still anxiety inducing. It's just in your mind so you know that like you're safe. And I think that's why people like horror movies too. Also, people just like being scared. It's that thrill of like you said, that tension of building up, but you know that you are in a safe environment, but you can still suspend reality to kind of, you know, for that immersive, effective experience.
Well, it's the reason why people love roller coasters, yeah, but don't love being in like a traffic accident.
Exactly.
The roller coaster, in theory, you know, this is safe. I am buckled up. This has been tested. There are safety regulations. So I think it's the same thing, like you said, with true crime or with horror movies, that you, and to the extent that it is a almost anxiety relieving, because you do tell yourself, okay, now that I've gone through it, I am prepared. It's why kids do fire drills in school.
Yeah.
Why they brought that trailer where they set it. Did a fake fire to the parking lot of my grade school. We talked about that work.
Yes.
They were like, you're in a bedroom. Now it's filling with smoke. What do you do? It was a little bit traumatic at the time, but we knew the firemen were on the other side. And then after that, you're like, oh, I can sleep soundly knowing if I wake up and there's smoke coming out from under the door, I know exactly what to do.
I think that's very effective, though. I will say, when you and I were at a recent wine night,
yes,
and another friend there who's a teacher was talking about these school shooter drills they have to do. My anxiety listening to her talk about those through the roof. I can't, and I know they're crucial and necessary for kids to go through, but I was like, if I had to do that as a 14-year-old, I would be, the rest of the day, I'd be a fucking wreck.
Like, what does that do to you? Because they did say that you have, they're in the band hall and they have to go into an area with like a garage door and lock the garage door. And part of it is the kids not yelling. And so they have to bang on the garage door to startle the kids to see if they would yell, which, like you said, it's got an important reason to it. I wish we didn't have to have those.
Sure.
But like, what is the psychological toll then that it is taking? Again, because even though you know, okay, I know this is fake, it still does get your adrenaline up.
Yeah,
and I think it still mimics that.
You're standing there in the dark. And all huddled together and out of nowhere, a teacher bangs on the outside of it and is like yelling stuff like, yeah, open up. We know you're in there. Like, I mean, that's terrifying. Even if you know it's fake. And I mean, but when you're put in those situations on, I don't know how regularly they do those things, but in the event you ever had to really do it, you are then prepared.
Yeah,
just like watching these movies or listening to other people's tragic tales, like you feel a bit more prepared.
Yeah, you tell yourself, I know what I would do. So, yeah.
Based on the novel of the same name by author William Blatty, The Exorcist is the tale of a young girl named Reagan, who, after playing with a Ouija board, becomes possessed by the devil. When it was released, the film horrified audiences and haunted their dreams. But it seemed in real life, the production of the movie itself was possessed by some unseen powerful force. This is a very classic scary movie. I remember many shots from it well. It's still, I need to rewatch it. I believe it's the second Exorcist, or maybe the third, that I found especially scary. It's when, I know there's a big scene at a hospital.
Oh, I haven't seen any of the sequels. I
remember watching that one with my dad, and there is a scene where a figure walks through like the hallway at the hospital, and it's like an end of the hall shot, and it's very creepy. I know, I'm creeping myself up.
Don't like it. I just know this from all the comedy parodies.
There's yeah,
all the pea soup references.
Very yeah, there's a ton of those. One major setback for production was a raging fire that burned down the house where the film was set. Creepily enough, the only room that didn't burn was the room that belonged to the character Reagan, the child possessed by the demon. After a thorough investigation, it was determined that the set was not the victim of arson and had no electrical problems that would have caused the blaze. Rather, the inferno had occurred after a bird flew into a circuit box.
Was it a devil bird?
Don't birds cause a lot of plane accidents, too?
My sister was on a plane. They were taking off, and a bunch of birds flew into it, and they landed. Of course, they got coupons to go on another plane ride, but I'm pretty sure after you get off that one, you're like, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean,
luckily nothing happened, but that's what happened with Sully Sullenberger when the miracle on the Hudson, the bunch of geese flew into the airplane engine.
Geese don't survive, but
this is unrelated.
Everyone on the plane does.
Leanne and I were talking about something, and she texted me a GIF of Fabio. You remember him?
Oh,
I can't believe it. Yeah.
Like it was yesterday.
And I was like, every time anybody mentions Fabio, my mom will go, you know, he got hit in the face by a bird on a roller coaster. And so I sent Leanne.
I did not know that. Thank you, Nancy, for that fun trivia.
They had created this Fabio roller. It wasn't a Fabio. It was a roller coaster called the Chariot. And Fabio and three women dressed as Greek goddesses go on the roller coaster as like the inaugural ride. And they take off. And the video's great. And he looks like he's having a hoot. And he comes back and his face is bloodied. And he's like scowling. And all the three Greek goddesses are like looking on concerned, like touching his arm. And then the video shows him later on talking to the news. And he's like, this is going to happen again. It's an accident waiting to happen. And he's a goose flew and hit him in the face.
Mid ride?
A big ass goose.
What's a goose doing? Like that's wild.
He was like, it wasn't just me. There are going to be children. This thing needs to be taken offline.
I wonder if there was this video.
I think there was like a pond nearby maybe, but also it was him and three other people. That goose was a targeted attack.
Yeah, that goose knew what it was doing.
But yes, birds are extremely dangerous.
They're mean, too.
And there's a conspiracy that they're not real and that they're all government drones. So maybe that's why the government did it.
Oh, the government was after Fabio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, due to the bizarre nature of the fire, the producers had Reverend Birmingham, a priest who was serving as a technical advisor, perform a special blessing on the set. This apparently did not work, as the rest of production was besieged by further problems.
Dude, imagine you're Reverend Birmingham, you try to bless it, and shit just goes down worse, and you're like, oh, God is mad at me.
You got to hang up that, your little, I don't know what
collar?
They're called. Your little collar, but I was trying to think of the things that Catholic priests wear. Yeah,
the robes?
Yeah, but the things go over the robe. You know, on Midnight Mass, when he wears the gold one.
You're not supposed to.
Wear the gold one?
No, well, watch Midnight Mass.
I've seen it. I finished it. I'm not going to give any spoilers.
No spoilers.
One iconic scene shows Ellen Burstyn, who played Reagan's mother, thrown across the room. Her face contorts in pain as she screams from her injuries. These screams are genuine because she was in pain, having permanently injured her back when she fell. Burstyn noticed the director kept rolling despite her injury, which caused her to shout,
"Turn the fucking camera off!"
The director still used the shot in the final cut of the film. In addition to her injury, an on-set carpenter lost his thumb in an accident. Later in another incident, a lighting technician lost his toe.
God, this man
bless
kept
him.
Rolling.
You know, I kind of get it, though, because that's how you get, like, the best, honest reactions. It's already happened. So you
can't
just
undo it.
You can't undo it. You just get the one shot, you and then you immediately help. Because, like, I don't know how long it went on, but he got the part that was happening that he could not have prevented even by having yelled cut, which is the scream.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why movies like this are so effective and believable is because people are really getting hurt on them.
we'll hear some of the other incidents where they're screaming and it was like, yeah, they had a reason to.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're right, though, because if once you that's happened, she's probably going to get carted away and they can't shoot anymore. So that, you know, the injury is not all for naught because mm-hmm. they at least salvaged it.
At the same time, though, I would also be like, turn the fucking camera off, because back mm-hmm. pain, that pain, back pain, tooth pain. Mm-mm. I can't
nothing
deal with
else worse.
Mm-hmm. Fingers and toes weren't the only things lost. In total, the cast and crew suffered 9 deaths.
Which is an enormous amount of deaths.
According to actress Ellen Burstyn. One of the on-set technicians died, as did a night watchman. Two of the actors, Max von Sydow and star Linda Blair, both lost family members during filming. Just a month before the film's release, Jack McGowan, who played Burke Dennings in the film, died from flu complications. He also died in the film at the hands of the young possessed child, Reagan.
It's a lot.
9's a lot. I don't know if there's a normal amount, but I think 9 is way over that if there is.
Well, as we learned in the end, there's probably not record of it if there is more than that. But yeah, that's it's like everybody's coming to set and it's like, these are some like, you know, bereavement flowers for, and they're like, mm-hmm. for Ellen? No, actually for Linda. Like, there's so many people going through so many tragedies all at once.
After its release, the film continued to spread chaos. Throughout the world, audience members allegedly vomited and passed out during screenings. Famed preacher Billy Graham declared the film was cursed. After a screening in Rome, lightning struck the enormous cross on a nearby church, causing the cross to topple down from the place it had occupied for 400 years prior to that night.
Billy Graham is cursed.
100%. One bright spot was that 15-year-old Linda Blair was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her portrayal of Reagan. Sadly, her acting may have been too convincing. She received death threats and had to be accompanied by bodyguards for 6 months after the film's debut.
How are you going to threaten a 15-year-old girl because she's really good at acting?
Oh, God. Do you think she's legitimately possessed? Do you think she really killed a priest? What's going on here?
Have you seen a movie before?
But that happens so much with movies. And
people can't separate.
They can't. I mean, and then it's taken to the extreme, and that's when you get like stalkers and stuff mm-hmm. that kill actors for a role they played or because they think that they have a relationship with the character that they're playing on TV mm-hmm. or the screen. So, yeah, that's the dark, seedy, scary side of acting that nobody wants to encounter.
For real, yeah. Especially, I mean, at least she got bodyguards, but she's 15.
15, you're already in over your head as far as, mm-hmm. like, maybe not in over your head, but you're stressed the fuck out. Being an actor at any age is stressful. But when you're 15 and you got all your normal 15-year-old drama to deal with, too,
and
then
threats.
Now you got death threats, nah.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
The movie is not actually cursed, according to author William Peter Blatty, who wrote the novel The Exorcist and adapted his work into the film's screenplay. He believes the rumors began when a reporter visited set after some of the production mishaps and asked the director, William Friedkin, whether the movie was cursed. Blatty told the Austin American Statesman,
"Friedkin must have answered in the affirmative because that's how the whole thing started."
When the 2004 prequel to the film was delayed by various cast and crew changes, executives were once again asking whether the film was plagued by a dark force. Blatty dismissed this idea, telling the paper,
"Curse? There's no curse. Never was. When you've been shooting for over a year, it's always nice to have demons to blame." William Blatty is full of fucking shade, and I'm here for it.
You know, he could have gone the other way and been like, yeah, this film is cursed. I have made no mistakes, and it is the demons at work. But I appreciate that he's like, nah, things just happen. Production has been stalled for reasons out of our control. And this is just, when you got a huge cast and crew, there's going to be things that happen.
True.
But nine, that is a lot. And
that
at some point, you do start to wonder, is this just a coincidence? Or is, you know, it bad energy leading to more bad energy? Even if it's not like a curse, like there's a vibe and an energy on set. And maybe that affects like how you then act outside of set, which causes some sort of weird domino effect.
Well, no, I think a demon doesn't know whether you're saying the incantation is a line in a movie or trying to,
Stand down, everyone. They're just acting.
They're like, and cut. And the demon's like, and sucks back down to hell. They're like, they said cut. Turns out it was a line the whole time.
Released on June 6, 1976, The Omen tells the story of the Antichrist, who has taken the form of an angelic-looking young boy named Damien Thorne. Directed by Richard Donner, who went on to head up such fun films as The Goonies, Lethal Weapon, and Scrooged, The Omen was a decidedly dark film that featured graphic on-scene deaths at the hands of the demonic youngster.
God, Scrooge is the best Christmas movie.
Oh, hands down.
On record.
Damien, and I apologize to any listeners who are a Damien or know a Damien, but if your kid is named Damien, there's a good chance he's the Antichrist.
I mean, have you seen South Park?
That is a demonic-sounding name.
Devil. That's a devil name.
Isn't Damien also the kid in Children of the Corn?
I'm not sure. That's one I have not seen.
I think it is. That is it's and I've known a Damien. He was very nice. So
Damien,
he's not all Damien's.
1976 Damien, you're making a statement. You're making a stand.
Mm-hmm. The troubles for those attached to the film started almost from the beginning. 2 months before production was to begin, star Gregory Peck, a longtime Hollywood icon, suffered a major loss when his beloved son died by suicide. Then, as Peck was headed from Los Angeles to London to begin filming, the plane he was riding on was struck by lightning. This isn't too shocking, as about 7,000 planes are struck by lightning every year in the U.S., and planes are engineered to survive a shock without impacting flight. Still, it is a startling incident, especially when combined with the fact that producer Mace Neufeld's plane was also struck on another occasion. Then, writer David Seltzer, who was a passenger on a third plane, was also struck, according to Bloody Disgusting. When Peck needed to board a plane later on during production, he canceled at the last minute. He would later learn that plane crashed and killed all passengers on board.
I don't want to get struck by lightning ever.
Never.
Not on ground and not in an airplane. But they're huge things. They're, you know, whatever, 30,000
They're huge metal things
pounds.
Flying through the air. It's probably going to happen.
It's
obviously
definitely gonna happen.
7,000 times a year.
But, you know, it's engineered for it. It's like it's not that they're like geese, lightning. Oh,
they're
no.
They're not engineered for geese. They are engineered for lightning.
Fuck a goose, man. Damn. geese can take down an airplane, but not Fabio.
Yeah. No.
He got off of that roller coaster with pride. But yeah, so it's in this case, you know, it happens a lot. But to three people all connected to the exact same project, that's sus.
Yeah. The creepiest thing is this whole like Final Destination thing. You cancel your flight and then you learn everyone died on that flight. And then you start to wonder, if I had been on that flight, would it not have happened? Like, would me maybe causing a little bit of a delay getting on board or putting up my bags been just enough time to where we avoided something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Or you were on it and you died. So,
yeah. Damn. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. You just always wonder.
Oh, yeah. In one famous scene, Rottweilers viciously attack one of the characters. However, the attack wasn't just for the camera. The trainers in charge of the animals suffered injuries when the Rottweilers got through their protective gear and actually made contact with flesh and bone. Another scene features baboons going wild on two characters as they scream inside a car. This was actually achieved by sticking one real baboon inside the car with the actors. This caused the actress Lee Remick to be completely horrified, so her on-camera screams were just as real as they seemed. The actors made it out safely, but the trainer in charge of the baboons suffered an unthinkable tragedy. According to producer Harvey Bernard,
"He was killed the day after we shot there. He was killed by a tiger. It grabbed him by the head and it killed him instantly."
God. Jesus.
This is chaos. They stick a baboon in a car. The scene is horrific.
Yeah.
And you see she truly probably fears for her life because she thinks a goddamn baboon's about to start wailing on her face.
They, from what I've heard, can be quite vicious. I'm assuming the ones on this movie set were trained. Here's the thing, though. I got some issues with animals on movie sets.
In this case, where they're being upset because they think that their baboon buddy is trapped inside a car.
Or
with a lady who's screaming. Everyone's screaming.
They're put inside a small car and a person is just screaming their head off. That's got to make them feel anxiety. You can't explain to a baboon, this is just a scene. This is all fake. All they know is like fight or flight and something's going down. It's terrifying. Yeah, I mean, I know there's laws in place that, like, are supposed to protect animals on movie sets, but at the end of the day, they're also animals, and they're unpredictable, and they also don't understand what the hell's going on some of the time. I mean, this lion ripped this guy's head off.
Well, it was a tiger, and it was at least not on set. That was separately when he went back to, I guess, where he works, his place of business. But it just shows you, like with Tiger King or anything, they can't be tamed. I think you think, oh, they can be tamed. I got this. It's a little bit of probably an ego thing. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. I don't think nowadays they would have let them use the one baboon as like a lure for the other ones.
Yeah.
They probably would be like, okay, we're going to get the baboon super excited by, you know, hanging treats, you know, above their heads or like in the car. So it looks like their happy face looks similar to their scary face. But I don't think nowadays, with the amount of whistleblowers, like people paying attention, you would be able to essentially torture these animals.
Yeah.
And or at least emotionally upset them.
For sure.
Just to get a good shot. But in this case, he's like, I don't know, make them think that their baboon friend is trapped inside.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Goodall have something to say about this.
Or they could just shoot it where there's not even a person in the car, and just by the way it's edited, it looks as if the baboon and the person are in the same car.
Or they would be CGI.
Yeah, or baboons. They wouldn't even use real animals. Exactly. Animal attacks were not the only danger near the set. The hotel that director Richard Donner was staying at in London suffered a bombing incident just moments after he and his wife drove off in a taxi cab one evening. The pair allegedly thought the sound was an earthquake, and only later learned it was a bombing in the lobby where they had just been. On another evening, Gregory Peck and other members of the crew were set to meet at a restaurant for dinner. Sadly, the restaurant suffered a bombing just hours before Peck and his crew arrived for the reservation. Airplane lightning strikes, bombings, multiple bombings. It's unusual incidents happening multiple times. Just one time a lightning strike happening and one time a place being bombed is bizarre. But then when those things happen more than once, ultra bizarre. Yeah.
And I mean, I think they said when Richard Donner and his wife, I mean, there's not going to be an earthquake in London, but they're from L.A., so they hear this like big rumble and your brain just goes, oh, just another earthquake.
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, that was a bombing.
Yeah, the IRA bombed the hotel. One famous shot in the film involves a car rolling down a hill and decapitating one of the characters. special effects supervisor John Richardson helped design the shot, which was filmed from five different angles to give the audience a huge scare. Tragically, a year after the stunt was shot, Richardson was driving with his fiancée in Germany when the pair was in a head-on crash. The wheel of the car came up through the interior and decapitated Richardson's fiancée. According to Showbiz Cheat Sheet, Richardson claims he saw a sign stating that the town of Aumann was 66.6 kilometers away from the location of the crash.
A tragedy by all accounts, but those things on top of that, that's just, again, it's like coincidence. And if so, it is a extremely eerie and upsetting coincidence.
It is, yeah. And I mean, I think, me personally, I think it is a coincidence. I think it is a very bizarre one, though, that you would wonder why, of all places, would this have happened here? Mm-hmm. Or had I not filmed, been a part of the film, The Omen, would I have even noticed something like this? But again, true. Like, if you, because this is a year after, you know of all the things that happened while filming, maybe your brain is still making those connections. Like, you think things could still happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, your eyes are just, you know, you may be more likely to notice those things.
Mm-hmm. The original film wasn't the only one to suffer Damien's curse. During the filming of the remake in 2006, over 13,500 feet of film was lost, including footage showing Damien's 666 birthmark. What's more, Peter Postlethwaite, the actor playing priest Father Brennan in the remake, lost his brother during filming. According to Bloody Disgusting, as yet another sign of the devil making an appearance to the cast, Postlethwaite suffered this tragic loss after drawing three sixes in a row while playing a game of cards.
Yeah. I mean, I would be, like, when I was a kid, we went to Jack in the Box one time, and then I can't remember, we ordered, like, some tacos or something, and the total was 666, and my mom was like, hell no, add me on a carrot cake. That's God telling me I need to order something else.
Oh, dang.
She's like, I'm not paying 666. And so I think I would notice if I drew three sixes in a row, but, like, would Peter necessarily notice that had he not been, you know? And then you, like, make those connections. You should keep an eye out all the time for the devil.
I've gotten 666 on a bill, like a something checking out before, but I just
let it ride. You let it ride?
I did.
I'm not giving my
But I would notice, especially now because of just being into creepy stuff in the podcast, I would I notice when license plates have 666 or something on it.
I saw a license plate last night. Someone had spray painted. I think that was nefarious. They spray painted their license plate black.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you're supposed to do that.
Well, I don't know. I'm no cop, but I noted it.
Yes.
Made a note. The old neighborhood watch up here.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with Smart Card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
What's happening? This house is clean. They're here.
The Spielberg-produced supernatural horror film Poltergeist was released in 1982 and quotes from the movie immediately weaved their way into the cultural vernacular. The film was a commercial and critical success, but that didn't stop rumors from flying that the film was actually cursed.
I also love all the rumors, because we watch all these like movie breakdowns, that Steven Spielberg actually secretly directed it, and that the director was really just kind of a stand-in for Steven Spielberg. So Tobe Hooper was kind of like a proxy. Mm. I like these, like, because it was like contractual that Steven Spielberg couldn't direct a movie while he was directing something else. So
he ghost directed a ghost movie.
Hi.
One iconic scene in the film involves Jo Beth Williams, who plays the mom of the family, swimming in a muddy swimming pool as skeletons crop up around her. She screams at each one convincingly, leading the audience to believe they were real. Later, she told Reddit in an AMA,
"When we were shooting, I thought the skeletons were fake. I thought the prop department made them. But later, I found out they were real skeletons bought very cheaply. It really grossed me out."
Was the disrespectful use of these real skeletons to blame for the slew of mishaps and deaths that tormented the cast and crew as a result of their participation in the film? That's scene is classic. It scared the bejesus out of me.
Oh, this movie, so scary.
Yes, this movie still scares me. This movie got me.
Even clips of the movie, you start to get like heart rate raised, start to sweat. Craig T. Nelson crushes it.
Oh,
Dad from
so
Troop
good.
Beverly Hills. Yes. Coach, he's crushing it.
Love him.
But yeah, she does a particularly great job in this. And now when you know that the skeletons are real, you're like, oh, she must have known at the time and it really freaked her out. No, she's just that good of an actress. And then later screamed again when she found out she'd been fucking duped by the gross ass, I don't know if it was the prop department, I guess, whoever told her it was fine, or whoever told them
selling,
it was fine.
Who's selling skeletons to people?
What do you always say? I can get you a toe by 3 o'clock. I can get you a skeleton. Get you a skeleton by 11:30.
One of the most famously horrifying scenes of the horror flick is when Oliver Robbins, who played the family's son Robbie, was choked by the creepy clown doll in his room. As the animatronic clown wrapped its arms around Oliver's throat, director Tobe Hooper and producer Steven Spielberg watched and marveled at how realistically the boy reacted to the attack. When Oliver's face began to turn blue, Spielberg noticed and jumped in to save the child by pulling the clown off of him. Was it a case of animatronics gone wrong, or a truly cursed clown doll trying to kill the young actor?
Well, if you've ever seen the clown doll, it's cursed as fuck. Oh. You know, that thing has got a demon spirit in
God,
it or something.
That scared the shit out of me as a kid when it's on the on the chair and then it's not on the chair. And then he looks under the bed.
God,
stop it. Oh, my God. Stop it. I'm freaking myself out. This movie, still, I'm telling you, those older movies hit
something
different.
About them.
And this is still, like, this movie is scarier to me than any movie I've seen in the past decade of current horror films.
What was that one we watched?
Which one?
We separately watched it. The wild ass one that we just watched.
Oh, shit.
Malignant.
What was that called?
Malignant. Okay, that's the best movie ever made.
I mean, that's the best movie ever made. But as far as scaring me,
yeah,
this Poltergeist was still more effective.
And I mean, this is truly an evil ass cursed, you know, spirit inside this clown that the only person strong and brave enough to save him is Steven Spielberg.
I mean, he's a legend for many reasons, and saving children from demonic clown dolls is just one of them.
I saw Steven Spielberg in real life at South by Southwest in 2018.
Gosh.
I was at the Ready Player One premiere, and I knew that some of the cast and crew would come out because at South by, like, they always have, like, John Krasinski came out for A Quiet Place. It was a dope-ass year to go to South by. And when the Ready Player went, well, it, like, messed up in the middle of the movie. We had to, like, sit for 15 minutes. But eventually, at the end, the cast and crew came out. And I was on the first row of, like, a section, maybe, like, 5 rows back. So I was probably, like, 30 feet from Steven Spielberg. I didn't think I would give a shit. But something about him just being the icon that he is,
yeah.
I was just like, oh, my God, it's Steven Spielberg.
I would have fangirled out over
I was
Steven
like,
Spielberg,
so
for sure.
I was shocked at how, I mean, I also got to see Bill Murray up close, and I made him laugh. It was a whole thing. We got to do a whole South by take, breakdown later. But, yeah, it was Steven Spielberg. I'm like, yeah, you would save a kid's life. You would. Look at
oh,
you.
Yeah.
You could do anything.
Yeah, he can. And he has. Several tragic deaths plagued the actors of this film franchise. After the release of the first film, 22-year-old Dominic Dunn was murdered by her estranged ex-boyfriend, John Thomas Sweeney, who had been abusive during their relationship. He was convicted, but only served 2.5 years in jail of a 6-year sentence. Her father, Dominic Dunn, wrote an article called Justice, Father's Account of the Trial of His Daughter's Killer, for Vanity Fair, covering his daughter's murder and the subsequent trial. After the article was published, Dominic shifted the focus of his writing career to reporting on high-profile trials, including the trials of O.J. Simpson and the Menendez brothers. Sweeney, who now goes by John Mora, has returned to his previous career as a chef, according to Slate.
I went down a hole, Dominic Dunn. I read that article.
It's tragic.
Laura Gofke gave us the book, so I mean, we could probably do a whole deep dive on that whole scenario, like why he got such a short jail sentence. Mm-hmm. But that article is gut-wrenching, and it's some of the best nonfiction writing and just puts you in the moment, in every moment. And that's why I think I love nonfiction writing, is because you get to pretty much be somebody's, like, buddy as they go through. I mean, of course, he was doing it alone, but it's almost like you're standing in the room with them. And this whole case is just...
And because it's written from her father's perspective it adds a whole new many layers to it. The Vanity Fair article is fantastic. Laura Goff, our dear friend Laura Goff and listener of the show, when we started this podcast, I remember her emailing me that Vanity Fair article and was like, you've got to cover this. So
she gave us the book. I have the book.
Yeah. It's I haven't read it yet,
Laura.
Story.
I'm sorry. Full disclosure. I apologize. But we will. But yeah, because there's a lot going on of the justice system and like how he managed to get away with only a 6-year sentence, how he managed to get out so early. Then he changed his name.
So, and now he's working as a chef.
Just gets to go about and live his life after something so horrific.
On September 14th, 1985, at the age of 60, Julian Beck, who played the frightening Reverend Kane, the ghostly antagonist in Poltergeist 2, died of cancer during the film's post-production. Although many point to this as yet another instance of the Poltergeist curse, Beck had actually been diagnosed with stomach cancer before he even auditioned for and accepted the role. His thin appearance and sunken eyes, which reportedly caused child actor Heather O'Rourke to cry when first seeing him, was actually due to the ravages of his disease.
This was a pretty sad one. I mean, he took the role knowing that, you know, he was actively dying, but still absolutely crushed it and was just did an excellent job. But yeah, it's hard whenever, I mean, I guess if it's something that you really love, it's not really work and you want to keep working. Mm-hmm.
And you know that it's probably going to be your last role.
Mm-hmm.
Heather stole moviegoers' hearts as the adorable and formidable Carol Ann in all three of the initial films. Before the third film began production, Heather fell ill with what was diagnosed as Crohn's disease. She was put on medication that caused her cheeks to appear puffy, but still continued with filming. However, after the third film wrapped shooting, she became sick with flu-like symptoms. It was revealed she was actually suffering from sepsis due to an intestinal blockage. The septic shock caused cardiac arrest, and Heather died at just 12 years old.
It's really hard to see her in the third movie because her face is super puffy. She's like inflamed due to this medicine. And now knowing what they know, you know, knowing what we all know now, that she was very sick, but still, again, it's like still giving her best to the role. But if only, it's like we said with any of these things, if only I didn't get on the airplane, or if only we had taken her to another doctor, if only, I mean, you just tell yourself all these things, like I would have done something differently. But this was one of those where they said, you know, we did the best we could. And it wasn't until after she passed away that they were able to say, oh, well, we would have had to done a surgery we didn't even know to do to find any of this.
Actor Richard Lawson, who played one of the paranormal investigators in the first film, was able to escape death due to his work on the franchise. Lawson was headed on a fateful flight to Cleveland when a ticket agent recognized him from his acting work. As a gesture of goodwill, Lawson gave the man an autograph. Since he was a fan, the kind agent upgraded the actor to first class. After taking off from LaGuardia, the plane crashed into the dark, icy waters, leaving passengers strapped into their seats, floating upside down. In total, 27 people died on that flight. Later, Lawson found out that at least one person who was in his originally assigned row died, while Lawson survived. Decades later, Lawson went on to marry Tina Knowles and became stepdad to Beyoncé.
This is the opposite of a curse, is what I'm hearing.
This is, man, all of the things that would have changed had he not been recognized by that man.
Mm-hmm. Like, that agent was working that night. Mm-hmm. Richard Lawson is apparently a nice person. Then he wasn't like, I'm just trying to get on a plane, buddy. Fuck off. Right. You know, being like, oh, thank you so much.
It's a
I
good
really
lesson in no matter who you are and how big you are, be nice to people.
Always.
You never know what it could get you.
And then you survive, and later on, you get to be married to Tina and Beyonce's stepdad.
And more importantly, you're Beyonce's stepdad.
Yeah, that's the most important of all.
Amazing.
Blue Ivy's step-granddad.
Yes. The ghosts in the script weren't the only poltergeist hanging around. During her Reddit AMA, Jo Beth Williams, who played the mom in the film, relayed a story about the rented apartment she stayed in while filming.
I began to notice that every night when I would come home from shooting, exhausted, fried, the pictures on the walls would be crooked, and I would straighten them. And the next day I would come in, and the pictures would be crooked again. So that always made me feel a little nervous about the place I was staying in. But finally, I realized it was when I slammed the door closed to leave that the pictures would shift because I slammed the door.
She blamed the vibes on the set for the feeling of a curse.
Because we were supposed to be scared so much, I think everybody's nerves were hypersensitive.
Just like we were saying, like, you can't be that ramped up all the time and then just
juiced.
Go home and you're like, oh, yeah, this is
you're
also...
You're like, oh, the fucking pictures are cursed. And you're like, it's me. It was me the whole time.
This is also the same thing my mom told me when my dolls were moving.
What?
She blamed the air conditioner for moving them.
These dolls are fucking haunted.
They still went straight to the attic. Yes.
Yeah. Lock them up.
The alleged curse followed the film through sequels and remakes. Gil Keenan, the director of the 2015 remake, was asked during his AMA.
Did anything scary or unnerving happen on set while filming?
Keenan replied,
the house that I rented during filming was straight up legit haunted by a female spirit dressed in black. I became aware of her within the first few days of staying in the house. And only after I left did I receive a call from the previous owner who had moved back in, who was terrified by the goings-on in the house and wanted to see if I had experienced any of it. So it was an incredible real-life inspiration for filming that followed me home. Well, I mean, she definitely was there. It didn't follow me back to Los Angeles, but it followed me from set back to where I was sleeping during filming.
You just can't get, sometimes you can't clock out.
That's right.
Work follows
He's
you
like,
home.
I'm actually in the director's guild. So if I'm going to be working from home, I'm going to actually need compensation in time and a half because this is more than a 12-hour
day. I agreed to be haunted on set, but not when
Only.
I came home.
I'm going to file a grievance with the union.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Considered
the most cursed hit movie ever made
by Vanity Fair, horror movie icon Rosemary's Baby was released in 1968. Played by Mia Farrow, the film follows Rosemary Woodhouse, a young, pregnant woman who suspects her bizarre new neighbors are members of a satanic cult who want to eventually steal her baby to use in their demonic rituals. As terrifying as this premise sounds, the real-life horrors suffered by the actors were even scarier.
This movie is fucked up.
It's so scary.
Stuff with pregnancy. I've never been pregnant, but stuff with pregnancy movies where there's horror movies where there's something having to do. It's just so, I think it's being so vulnerable and it just. And she, Mia Farrow, crushes this role.
Yes. And she wasn't even their first choice. But after they saw her audition several times, they agreed like, no, she was meant for this role.
I have
not watched this since having kids. I bet it would affect me differently now, though. I mean, it was scary even back when I saw it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sydney Blackmer, who played the leader of the satanic cult, once declared on set,
"No good will come of this Hail Satan business."
According to Mental Floss, producer William Castle agreed and later said he believed the film was cursed after he was stricken with such severe gallstones that they had to be surgically removed. During his time in the hospital, he said he often hallucinated scenes from the movie, and at one point even yelled out,
"Rosemary, for God's sake, drop the knife!"
According to Vanity Fair. That's a... your nurse is a saint.
God.
For...
She's like,
"What is
my
happening?
Name is actually Kathy. Could you please stop shouting at me?
I don't have
this
a knife.
This isn't a knife.
Please.
This is a catheter."
Others that worked on the production suffered untimely deaths, including the composer of the film, Christoph Komeda, who died after an accidental fall off a rocky cliff left him in a coma. Eerily, this was the same method the witches used to kill Rosemary's suspicious friend in the book written by Ira Levin.
Yeah,
well,
like you said, yet another. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's the question, it's like all the butterfly effect, another movie to refer to, where you're like, okay, well, if I hadn't have done that movie, it's not that the movie caused it, but maybe like you would have gone hiking a month earlier or a month later or with a friend or with a different, you know, like you just couldn't, you can't go back and change it, but there is definitely when you see tragedy all associated kind of around one nexus, like one linchpin in the middle, you're like, oh, well, if I wasn't associated with that, would that have made a difference?
Mm-hmm.
Or Final Destination style, another movie reference. Was it bound to happen? I mean, we're all going to die,
death.
Right?
Yeah,
we're all going to die.
It's just a matter of time. Or
happy Wednesday. You're going to die.
Or can you cheat it?
We're going to find out in a future episode.
A little,
I'm rolling into this.
Foreshadowing teaser. To a future, yeah. A little teaser to a future episode. Arguably the most infamous real-life tragedy of the film was the death of Sharon Tate, wife of director Roman Polanski. Tate, who was pregnant at the time, was brutally murdered in her Hollywood home on August 8, 1969, by several members of the Manson family. Polanski had last seen his wife the month before her death. Having no way of knowing the horrific fate she would soon meet, Polanski later wrote in his autobiography that he had had
a grotesque thought.
The last time he was with Sharon.
You will never see her again.
At the crime scene, Helter Skelter, the name of a Beatles song on the White Album, had been scrawled in blood on one of the walls. 12 years later, John Lennon was assassinated across the street from the Dakota, where Rosemary's Baby was filmed.
Couple of things about this. Fuck Roman Polanski.
Fuck him real hard. We had to just mention him briefly as
Bane
the director.
Him from America.
But he is a monster, and he straight up fled America to avoid prosecution. And did he get sent back to have to deal with it?
No, I think the country he specifically went to was not going to extradite him. But it's one of those, like, he can only go to movie premieres in, like, France, or, like, he doesn't come to the States
mm-hmm.
anymore. Last I heard. I don't keep a lot of tabs on Roman Polanski,
because
fuck that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
So
such
good.
An amazing film.
So good.
Covers, like, it's... such an interesting take on it. Mm-hmm. Still heart-wrenching in the reality of what happened. Also, it's completely unfair that I was never alive at the same time as John Lennon. It's pretty rude.
You know, I think about that a lot.
John
so
Lennon
unnecessary.
Had problems too. No one's an angel. But as
no
a little girl, I was very obsessed with John Lennon as like a pre-Backstreet Boys days. I spoke in a British accent for like a solid year. Was very obsessed with Help and A Hard Day's Night. And John was my favorite Beatle. And I had the little hat that matched, you know, the same one he had in Hard Day's Night and everything. And I accidentally learned that he was dead based on a VH1 Behind the Music special. And
no.
My mom had to like console me. It was like 1995. And they're like,
you
the
did
day
not.
John,
you so you operated
no
during your time of being introduced to the Beatles and being into them. You thought that he was alive that entire
yes,
time?
Yes, I had no idea that he was dead.
And then wow.
There was like VH1 Behind the Music, the day John Lennon died. And I turned around to my mom and I was like, what? And she was like, oh God, I knew this day would come.
She didn't right. tell you?
No, she hadn't told me before. And there was
I knew
wasn't...
from the beginning because my dad, this was pre-internet. Huge Beatles fan. Oh, so yeah, you had to rely on your parents to tell you the truth.
And I was only watching, like, Help and A Hard Day's Night, like, fictional movies, and then, like, listening to the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to get this biography. I was little. I was probably, like, maybe 8 or 10.
I knew he was dead because my dad was a huge Beatles fan and was very much into the conspiracy that of Paul having been murdered. And it was, I believe you watched a documentary and now you think the same, but there was like all these little Easter eggs that made people think it was real. Like in Abbey Road, he doesn't have shoes on. And if you play part of it, I forget which song it is, but the end, it says, John says, I buried Paul.
Paul's dead.
Yeah. So my father was very into that. My father was very into like conspiracy theories like that. I told you he also thought like Elvis was still alive. So
okay,
I didn't know when I was little. I knew Elvis was dead, but mm-hmm. somehow I suspended that knowledge and legitimately thought I was going to marry him. Like 7 and thought, yes, this is a good idea. I'll marry a man in his mid-30s.
I thought I was going to marry Burt Convy, and then my mom had to break the news to me that Burt Convy was dead. He was a game show host.
Yeah.
In the 1960s. Good
man,
looking.
A weird thing we have in common. We both were in love with like dead, much older celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your dad was right. Paul McCartney is not Paul McCartney. He's a Canadian pharmacist.
Well, Paul McCartney, if it is Paul McCartney, has got a lot of issues now and is also problematic. So maybe it would be better if he was a Canadian pharmacist.
And then also there's a really amazing short story written by BJ Novak about the premise is that Elvis just faked his own death and became an Elvis impersonator live out his days. And it's called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories by BJ Novak. One of my favorite short story collections. It's phenomenal. But that I choose to believe that like Elvis got a happy ending, that he got to retire and like just sing Elvis songs, but not be mobbed by people.
I think that's why my dad chose to believe it too. And it was always kind of like, I couldn't tell if he honestly believed it or he just wanted to believe it, and it was kind of, you know, like a fun thing. But I think on some level, he wanted to believe it so bad that he kind of tricked himself into like, mm-hmm. this could be a thing.
Yeah, you want him to have, he gave so much to the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Castle believed all of these horrors were not mere coincidences, but that the film was cursed, saying,
"The story of Rosemary's Baby was happening in real life. Witches, all of them, were casting their spell, and I was becoming one of the principal players."
Between untimely cast and crew deaths, illnesses, injuries, on-set mishaps, and eerie events that seemed to follow people home, these films all certainly appear to be cursed. However, Hollywood is like many other industries, and in that it is no stranger to on-the-job incidents. The Associated Press conducted an investigation in 2016, tallying on-set deaths and injuries in the movie business since 1990. The findings showed that 43 people have died on set, while another 150 have been left with life-altering injuries. Most troubling of all, the AP had to do some serious digging to find those numbers, as many had not been properly documented in investigation records or reported to the Federal Safety Administration, OSHA. Though many on-set incidents are reported in the media, like the recent tragedy on the Alec Baldwin film Rust, or the 1993 death of Brandon Lee on the set of The Crow, that is not always the case. While horror films may seem to benefit from the tragedies associated with them, as it plays into the ominous tone of the film, most producers wish to keep accidents and mishaps a secret. Film critic and journalist Stephen Farber told the AP,
"I think it's always been something that's been swept under the rug."
Megastar producer and director J.J. Abrams wants to keep mishaps off his set entirely. Abrams told the AP that on-set safety is the most important consideration.
"Accidents happen, and so there's that category. Then there are accidents waiting to happen. And I think that film crews have done an extraordinary job preventing the accidents waiting to happen."
Major studios and the various labor unions associated with the filmmaking industry have made on-set safety a priority by conducting new training programs and regular industry meetings focused on improved safety. And this is, of course, now in the media more than ever with the Rust tragedy recently. Mm-hmm. And I think even more laws will change as far as what's required and somebody checklist and multiple eyes on things to make sure that all those things that you're supposed to do to keep people safe are getting done.
And also, like, feeling empowered as a lower level crew member mm-hmm. to say, I don't care who the producer is. I don't care what the studio is. This stuff needs to be because it's like, well, my career is going to be ruined. Well, yes. Or you or somebody else on the set could lose their life.
Yeah.
So I feel like the folks on the Rust set have seemed to be empowered of, you know, submitting text messages or texting people off set to say like, hey, I want to like whistleblow. I want people to be aware that this is going on set. And so hopefully the whole sweeping under the rug. And Stephen Farber is the journalist that really covered the Twilight Zone tragedy.
Yeah, that was crazy too.
Where there was like an issue with, again, the director was going too hard. Like, okay, let's just do this. Even though it's breaking the rules, it's going to be for a better shot. Like having someone that is going to follow the story, expose what happened, you know, point the finger where the liability lies, regardless of how famous a director is. I think it takes stuff like that mm-hmm. for people to be, okay, empowered. Like, I can stand up, I can say something, and I won't be punished for it. And I think we as a society and consumers should say, we're not going to patronize movies where you guys blacklist somebody who was just whistleblowing when something was going on set. And we want safe movies. Again, use the fucking computer to get the shot.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to torture somebody. You don't need to torture an animal. You don't need to risk people's lives. It's just a movie. We love them. We love storytelling. I'm marrying a filmmaker. This man loves movies. I have to watch movies and movie breakdowns all the time. I've grown to love it. But a human life is more important.
Absolutely. There's no movie that's worth a human life being taken. In that same vein, boycotting movies where directors have a reputation for going too hard and not being mm-hmm. safe or other types of misconduct on set.
And big actors, and I think we like seeing like Scarlett Johansson standing up to Disney. That's more mm-hmm. of like a contractual thing. But saying, no, we stand with these actors who are going to say, I'm not going to work with a director that doesn't take my safety seriously. Mm-hmm. And doesn't take, especially if you're the actor that you have that more, the draw, you have the more of the swagger that you can say, oh, hell no. What are y'all doing over there? No, I'm not going to work on a set that does something like mm-hmm. that. Where we as consumers say, we favor the actors and the directors who take crew safety as a priority, then, again, people are going to go where the money goes. It's, like, so cynical of me to say that. But if you're like, we don't buy tickets. No, it's like, we don't buy tickets to movies that have, you know, directors that put people in danger. That's, like, one of the only ways we can all kind of act to hopefully see these changes happening. But it sounds like the industry is focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Of course, not all of these horrible incidents occurred on set. Once the cameras stop rolling, if there is some sinister force out to punish filmmakers for covering a dark subject, there may not be any earthly way to stop it. In these cases, life imitating art is not poetic and beautiful, but rather viciously dark and haunting. So what do we think?
some of them, it seems like there was, you know, it's like too much of a coincidence. But as with anything, are they predisposed to looking out for those connections to the demonic mm-hmm. when it would otherwise just be a simple tragedy?
Yeah, I think that maybe some bad energy, you know, mm-hmm. if you get too much of that going on in one place, that can affect things because it affects how you may act outside of work and offset. And like I said, that domino effect of you never know where that can lead. I think that when you get big cast and crews together, especially like big franchises and they're filmed over years, there's going to be a lot of stuff that goes on. That's just statistics. 9 is certainly a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hopefully with more and more safety measures and precautions and stuff, then less stuff like that will happen and movies won't have that type of reputation. And there's a lot of movies that aren't horror movies that also have a reputation for being cursed. I think people look to it, one, because, you know, it's morbidly fun to draw those types of conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it kind of gives people a nice, like, well, this happened because this movie was cursed. Our movie is not cursed, so it's not going to happen on this set. You know, kind of like we said, like, you watch these to understand how you would act in that situation. On the opposite, you're like, well, I don't need to worry about that because, you know, we're super safe on our set. So
yeah,
it's almost like you protect yourself from the thought of like, this could happen to me at my job with this guise of like, oh, that's because it happened because of a curse.
And you're like, yeah, we're not fucking with demons on this set, so we'll all be okay. Well, and hopefully if you're everybody's following the rules and the safety measures, and it sounds like for the most part, you know, that's hopefully more and more we'll see increased safety measures and decreased incidents, but you can't stop those goddamn birds. So if the geese is going to get you, it's going to get you. So
that's true.
No amount of industry meetings is going to stop a goose if it wants to hit Fabio in the face.
I've got to look up that video immediately. As soon as we're done, I'm looking up that video.
I'll send you a link.
Please do.
I'll put it at the very top of the show notes page so you all can see it.
Oh, so everyone, you just go to the show notes and you too can see Fabio.
Sinisterhood.com. There's a button at the top that says show notes.
The aftermath of his geese encounter on a roller coaster.
Prepare yourself. He lived. The goose, we're not sure.
Oh, gosh.
It's probably a robot.
Tragedy.
It flew back to home base to
that's
be like,
true.
I
it's
got
a drone.
Him.
So, yeah, it was just, it got the data it needed for the government, and then it flew back. Well, you have a live show coming up, don't you? An improv show?
I do. I have one improv show, the last of the year, December 17th at Dallas Comedy Club. I'm going to be part of Hot Dish. If you come to Hot Dish, it's a mix and mingle group, a new cast every time.
Mm-hmm.
Wheels off. It's wild times. A comedian will tell like
sure
a three-minute story, and then we just go hard. And
yep.
It's just wild shit. So
I played a gator that didn't want my child to leave the swamp and move to the big city in the last one we did.
I was Meghan Markle and I talked with a British accent, so that was embarrassing because she's not British. So whoops, never know what's going
to
happen.
We had some listeners come, and we always have listeners come to the show, so it's always fun to
meet
say
afterwards.
Hi to them afterwards. Yeah, well, I will not be there for that because I got a family thing. But go see Heather because
it's
bound to be a good time for sure. We love providing Sinister to you at no cost, so if you like what you hear, consider supporting the show by donating to our Patreon. We're a small operation, creating the show for you by researching, writing, recording, and producing it ourselves. Any amount is sincerely appreciated and helps offset the cost of making and hosting the show.
As a thank you, you'll get some sweet perks like ad-free episodes. I mean, you're going to miss us talking about Manscaped balls and sticking stuff in us with a yard lap. But if you're like, man, this is a lot of ads, smash that Patreon subscription button at the So Sinister tier. Blammo. No more ads.
No more ads.
You also get a Sinisterhood sticker if you're ruling the airwaves tier. Membership to the exclusive Patreon Facebook group, if also for ruling the airwaves. You get a shout-out on the show. Monthly bonus mini-sode. Got some Murdoch updates.
Mm-hmm.
And you get patron exclusive video and audio content, including Am I the Asshole? Relationship is segments, Judge Christie, True Crime Headlines we're about to come out, talking about Love Has Won updates.
Mm-hmm.
So we got all kinds of fun stuff.
And a local Dallas judge and some alleged mishaps. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You also now have the fun perk of access to our Discord server, where you can connect with other fans in real time and discuss the latest in true crime, share personal ghost stories, or just post adorable pictures of your pets. We'll hop on occasionally, and we're also hosting monthly Q&As on Crowdcast, where you can ask us all your burning questions.
Oh, we got a Q&A coming up next. It's going to be Wednesday, December
15th. And then our live stream is the following night on the 16th, where the people have two more days to finish voting on what we're going to cover on that one. Right now, the wheel is winning. So
wheel is in the lead.
That's going to be fun. And those are at 8 p.m. Central Time, and they're always so much fun.
For our patrons not in the U.S., you now have the option to pay in pounds or euros, saving you the cost of the conversion fee. Annual memberships for all tiers are also now available. If you select this option, you get a free month of membership. It's a great gift if you're like, man, I love Sinisterhood, and so does my best friend. We should both get Sinisterhood Patreon subscriptions, and then we have even more content to discuss and hang out. If you truly love someone, you'll get them a Sinisterhood Patreon subscription, and the annual thing is the way to go. You just sign up, use your own email address, and you change it to theirs later. There's not really a gift option, but you can kind of get around it, mm-hmm. or just give them like a little voucher that's like, I'll sign you up for Patreon if you give me this voucher back.
Super cute. And what a fun thing if you were in the 10 or 25, if you're in Ruling the Airwaves or getting into it, and then you get to participate in the Q&As or mm-hmm. live stream in the chats together, so then you can like chat with like your actual bestie, and then you can talk about it outside. It's so much fun to be had.
And it's like a wine of the month club, because you know, it's like it's something every month. It's not mm-hmm. it's like an experiential gift.
Those are the gifts I give. Yes. Like those are the Tommy and I decided years ago, we do experiences or like buy. Like, this year, we might be getting a new TV. Like, we just...
something we'll use.
Yes. And it's something that's, like, that we really want. So, I like experiences.
It lasts the whole year.
That's a good one. It's a gift that keeps on giving. For more details on all of this and specific member tiers, visit Sinisterhood.com and click Patreon on the top banner. And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out and a new little thing we're doing called our Thank You Corner.
Yes, we appreciate all of you, and we have so many thank yous. If you're wondering what to stick in your loved one's stocking or what to shove under the tree or just give them something because you appreciate them, there's nothing as good as Sinisterhood merchandise. If you want some cool swag to deck yourself out, deck your own halls, or to bless someone that you know and love, head to Sinisterhood.com, click shop in the top banner, and we got things like mugs, t-shirts, totes, and clothes for your kiddos. Everybody in Sinisterhood gear, take your family Christmas photos, send them out.
Oh my gosh.
It's the greatest thing. It'll be amazing. That's Sinisterhood.com, click on shop in the top banner.
I cannot wait to see... family, do a Christmas card. If somebody does a Christmas card, everybody is in all Sinisterhood clothes. We will share that on our social media 100%.
Yeah. If you do that, if you send it out to more than 10 family members, I'll personally call you.
There you go.
Done
also,
done.
Please send one to our P.O. box.
Yes.
Send two. Well, see, I don't want you to have to send two. But if you want to us to each have one, then send two. If not, we'll have to fight over it or we'll just rip it in half. Like, what was that story in the Bible?
I don't think it's the Bible where they ripped the baby up.
It's not the Bible. That's not the Bible. I
mean, is it? What's this guy's name? Solomon. Is that in the Bible?
I think that's the Bible. Is that just a fable? Well,
Bible
so is the Bible.
Hardcore.
Sorry. Tis the season.
Thanks, Jesus.
Well, the best thing you can do to help us grow is like, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please tell a friend who you think would like us to check us out. It means so much to us and really helps podcasts like us get more exposure.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sinisterhood Pod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Christy, where can we find you?
I can be found on Twitter at Christy or GTFO and on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace. Heather?
I am on Twitter at MCK versus the world and on Instagram at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts. Melissa Clausen.
Amanda Scacia.
Kathy Turner.
Roberta Reed.
Dylan Sedlicek.
Jessica Downing.
Annika Bushra.
Brianna Dunn.
Jenny Lee Swanner. What is up? We went to high school together.
Oh,
buddy.
Awesome. What's
How
up,
you doing?
Jenny Lee? Melinda Sutley.
Ashlyn Sepulveda,
Carolina,
Jennifer Kaufman,
Amanda,
Janine M. Tyrone,
Tori Thomas,
Olivia Hughes,
Desiree Farmer,
Jude Temple,
Melly B.
Paige,
Vicky Yakawuk,
AJ Georger,
Kristen Payne,
Jessica,
Brianna Kelly,
Rachel Hitt,
Mary Jacqueline,
Gigi,
Grace Ensminger,
Jordan Jakubielski,
Iana,
Trish Conover,
Christina,
Grace Adams,
Kristen Weaver,
Savannah Soto,
Kristen Blosser,
Daisy Ornelas,
Lucy Young,
Lindsay Boone,
Alana Peters,
Salem Novak,
Lauren Baker,
Lacey E.
Gab,
Trinati Shires,
Sunny Ramirez,
Corinne Hall,
Rochelle,
Haley Fight,
Anne Fuenzalita,
Jamie,
Carly Garcia,
Sari Francis,
Letty,
Lane Taylor,
Diana M. Hornback,
Ashlyn Force,
Tori Peters,
Lori Pierce,
Erica Hayek,
Beth Grownie,
Samuel Brent,
Lindsay Rocio,
Rachel Shanks, what's up, Rachel?
Heather Turley,
Leilani M,
Carolyn Reese,
Theodore Lee,
Rebecca Bedeker,
Alana Peterson,
Sandra Duran,
Trina Colleen Bartlett,
Emily Tom Hollister,
Sarah Essay,
Seth Reams,
and Mariana Cosplays. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. We sincerely appreciate it. We hope we got your names right. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
And now is for our new segment, the Thank You Corner. We appreciate you all so much for all the lovely things you give us. It's not necessary, but it is definitely appreciated. We tried very hard to keep up with all the many wonderful gifts we got on tour. I'm not going to lie. I was in charge of this mostly. So if you're not on a list, it's on me.
No, it's not. It's on both of us. But Heather was very smart. And when you guys were so nice to give us stuff, she would write your names on the bag or something that it came in. So we tried really hard to keep track of everything. If yours isn't listed here, please let us know so we can properly thank you, because we appreciate all of you so, so much.
In Denver, Jenny gave us almond toffee.
So good.
Chelsea Berman of Fresh Baked Goods gave us hand-decorated cookies, including gluten-free ones that I demolished.
They were so very cute. Denver Comedy Works, thank you for our hoodies.
Yes, and in Salt Lake City, Kaden gave us a horrified board game, which we're fixing to play at our game night we have coming up.
Super pumped about that. Jessica, who was from Winnemucca, and I know how to say that because of the mug she gave us. She gave us a bunch of stuff, necklace, candy, a book on the city.
It was amazing. I still have some of those, a very few of those kisses left, the Hershey kisses. Mm. Angie gave us some amazing Sinisterhead tumblers with the logo wrapped around it. It was very impressive.
Awesome.
Ev gave us some Polish candy. And Ev, thank you so much for participating in the Just Christie segment. That was
so much fun. Ev was the nacho, not Joe. Yes. Maggie gave us chocolate covered pretzels, churro toffee, pumpkin spice toffee. The toffee was so good. We ate so much good candy and stuff these shows. Yes.
And Emily, thank you for the pumpkin mask. We were both really stoked about those and wore them all throughout the holiday season, the Halloween season. In San Antonio, Brittany and Melissa, you guys gave us Chupacabra shirts and El Pitayo gift cards. Thank you so much.
Bo from Lifestyle Choices on Etsy gave us nail polish and custom jewelry with Petal and the Goose. They were so cute.
So impressive. Sarah and Abby from Until the Very End podcast gave us some really cool stuff from Cincinnati. And I have a very cute Loveland Frogman sticker on my laptop now that that was from them. So I thank you all.
And Kelsey Enos gave us our Bigfoot BFF necklace, which I didn't know they made these things. And I don't know how I live my life without it. So sweet so of Kelsey. Cute. Kelsey also came to multiple shows. So thank you so much.
And had that badass alien sweater. I'm still wanting. I still want one. And Houston Plum Pretty gave us some ghost earrings. They're amazing. I think you can get them on Etsy. Shirley gave me a Shroot Farms mug for my birthday. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Paige Branham gave us spicy snack mix and gluten-free sweet potato chips. I will tell you, I ate both tubs of that spicy snack mix
gone.
In the hotel. I shared it, but I straight up ate all of it that night. It was so good.
I did not make it back to Dallas. Addison, thank you so much for the candle for my birthday. And Felicia Cummins, also thank you so much for the candle and the stickers. Really appreciate it. And if We got our cryptid tarot deck and our nail stickers. Please, we have a video of us using them on our Patreon. It's pretty ridiculous.
It's great. The Crypto Tarot deck, I want one of those for Christmas so bad. In Dallas, Sarah Air, y'all, I got an In-N-Out canister. This thing is incredible. It's sitting right next to me right now. It's like a foot tall. It's got the In-N-Out logo. Both Tommy and I were like, we're keeping our toilet paper in this because it only makes sense. She also made us scarves, knitted us scarves, and you got some gluten-free Oreos.
Those things, there's like three of them left. I tried to space them out, and they have barely made it. They're almost over.
Savor those last three.
Lauren from Ponder, Texas, gave us a Metroplex Monsters book, so we're going to dig through there for some future topics. Daisy gave me a red hat with white writing on it, and I had to ask if it was a MAGA hat. It is not. It is a Cece's Pizza Buffet hat, and I spent so much time at Cece's as a kid, and this is like the throwback hat that the managers used to wear. It is amazing. I have to say, I'm not going to wear it in public because from far away, it looks like a MAGA hat, so I can't take that risk, but thank you. Also, I know we got, I got some cookies and a wine straw, and I found the card in the bag, but the card was not signed. So thank you for our wine straws. We very much appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Kelsey Hubbard, thank you for the earrings, the apple butter, and the pepper jelly. She also later emailed to say, you guys, I wrote the wrong date on those. They are not expired. They are totally fine. And I said, guess what? We've already eaten them, and that's how little we care about food safety. We're like, this is really good. We don't care what year this came from.
Like, honestly, I thought it was like wine because it said apple butter 2020, and I was like, oh, like, it must be better if you sit it around for a year, and I was just spreading it on shit. And then she's like, just so you know, it's not expired. I was like, this shit expires? Like, oh, no. But like you said, disregarded the date completely. We also got some really cute cross stitches. You got a Judge Christie cross stitch, and I have one in here that says keep your cults off of Hawaii. But we have them in our hands, and I couldn't write on them, so I apologize. I did not write down who gave us that, but thank you so much. It is displayed proudly in the office. We have also gotten some mail-in gifts. I have sitting here with me from a quote from a Judge Christie that says, the house is haunted as a matter of law.
I haven't seen that yet.
Well, this is what happens when I'm the one that checks the mailbox. Oh, I just stuck it in the studio.
We gotta see, now we each have a studio. So now we gotta start divvying up the gifts.
Well, come on over. You can go shop in this place.
Or it'll be like we share custody. And one week I get that, and the next week you can have it.
That's right. We'll trade off. Also, Callie, thank you so much for my birthday card. I really appreciate it. Sent us some Alec candle extinguishers because I mentioned that I constantly leave my candles burning.
No, I did the other day. And yes, these extinguish, it's like magic. It keeps you safe at the same time.
So. It's only a matter of time.
Yes. Taylor Ondich, thank you so much for the t-shirt and the Mothman pin, which says, Mothman ate my entire acid at Denny's, and it's fantastic. Also, peppermint lip balm. She sent some to me and Ella. I'm saving Ella's for when she, I'm not using it, even though this lip balm is the bomb. It should be called lip balm because it's so good and it tastes so good. And Talia McAllister, thank you so much for the cryptids book. We love a good cryptid, and this one is chock full of them. So beautiful. We're going to be coming at you with some new ones.
New cryptids.
Yes. Well, thank you guys so much. Like Heather said, it's not necessary for you to ever give us anything, but when you do, we appreciate it so much, and we appreciate you guys. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Take care and keep it creepy.
Sinister.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.